Hello out there. This is episode 12, and I'm going to try to make this a short one because I'm a little late to get to the airport. But, you know, I'm not surprised that I'm late because I hit my head. Well, I didn't hit my head. This guy hit my head at DZ Death Ray. So when DZ Death Ray and Pup came to town, it was a great time. Everyone was having a really nice time. And this like, I was shooting in the pit, and this guy came over the barrier, and I just felt this smack in the side of my head. And I like was dazed for a second. I looked down at my camera. Camera's not functioning. It's giving me an error. That must have hit the stage. But so me and this guy were like, you know, he was knocked out on the ground. I was like just so, you know, lightheaded from being kicked in the head by this guy. And then he got carried out, and I came to fix the camera. I don't know what the hell was going on with the camera, but fix that. I lost like 2 minutes of photos. So I'm not sure if I was like super concussed or if, you know, I didn't actually take photos during that time. But anyway, went on, shot the show. During the show, this guy comes up to me, like after I had been kicked in the head, guy comes up to me. And he was like, oh, how's your head? He was like yelling over the music. He wanted to know how my head was so bad. And I thought that was like really, really weird. But he just wanted to apologize for kicking me in the head. So whoever that dude is that kicked me in the head, thank you. That's really nice of you to find me even during the show and apologize, because I love when that kind of stuff happens. They're like the stories. You know, you don't shoot shows and not expect, you know, things like that to happen. That's just what you should assume. So thanks, man. Thank you for finding me, and thanks for being a cute little sweetheart and apologizing. But yeah, late for the airport. I had to tell that story. I don't know why. It's not even very good. But anyway, first question. First question's from Neesh, N-E-E-S-H. So I hope I pronounced that right. Question was, what's the best advice for 35mm film? All right, I don't shoot film like really often, but when I do, I got a few different film stocks that I like to use. So black and white, when I do black and white stuff, I like to use Ilford XP2 because it's processed using C41. And that's the most common film developing method. So you're going to find it's a lot cheaper and it's going to be more common than E6. And E6 is used for positive film, like slide film. And so I would recommend, if you haven't sort of, you know, experimented with different film stocks, just starting with something that can be processed with C41. I don't know how experienced you are when you ask what the best advice for 35mm film is, but I would use a stock that uses C41. So if you want to do black and white stuff, I would look at Ilford XP2. Because most stuff is done by hand with black and white, and that's where it gets a bit more expensive. You know, Tri-X, Kodak Tri-X and Ilford Delta, they need to be processed by hand. And that means it's obviously more expensive and it can take a little while longer. Like those hour processing places, they're all C41. Tri-X and Ilford Delta are like, they're really nice films, but I find that Ilford XP2 is so similar in a lot of the characteristics of Tri-X and Ilford Delta. You know, you should give it a try because I think it'll sort of scratch that itch. If you love it, and I think you will love it, because everyone that I've given a roll to that hasn't tried it before really, really likes it. And so you'll save yourself a boatload of cash straight up with that. All of the color film that I use, though, is processed by E6. And that sucks because it's far less common than C41, and it's obviously more expensive. It costs me like 16 to 18 bucks a roll, and it takes, you know, a week, because a lot of labs that say they process it, they send it away to be processed. And so it's like 18 bucks just to develop it on top of the film, which is around about 15 bucks in itself here in Australia. You know, you look at things online, you're like, man, it's so cheap. That's why, like, when I go to Japan, I just buy so much film, and then I just like put it in the fridge, put it in the freezer, however the hell you believe you're meant to store it. I personally do not even store it in the fridge. I don't store it in the freezer. I store it in the bag I bought it in, Because I guess if you're not using it straight away, then you probably bought too much film or you're not shooting enough film. So it's a bit of an incentive to go through the bag. I prefer E6, like processed film or like positive or slide films, whatever you want to call it, because they're a little bit more contrasty and the colors are more vibrant. You could always edit it after the scan, obviously, with like a, you know, another type of film stock to apply more contrast or saturation, but I don't think it has the same effect. And if you're going to use film, you want the warmth that that film stock brings, not an artificial edit. Otherwise, you would be shooting digital or you wouldn't really be caring enough to understand the different film stocks anyway. I was a huge fan of Fuji Previa 400X. And that was when it was being made, unfortunately, because one of the worst things that Fuji has ever done, in my opinion, was stop making that film. Previa 400X wasn't like, you know, a 400 ISO film like it suggests. It was just as smooth as Previa 100F, which is, you know, an ISO 100. So if you've ever shot with Previa 100F, you'll know how silky smooth that is. It's beautiful. And there's no visible grain at all. 400X had the same level of smoothness as the 100F, but it was an ISO of 400, meaning that I could use it in like any camera in almost any situation with far less hassle than shooting on 100 ISO. But because it's no longer made and Fuji still makes Previa 100F, I guess it's still a good film. Like, it is a good film. I shouldn't say I guess it is. It is a good film, but I liked that flexibility of 400X. And I'm probably just a little bit bitter. I'm a bitter man. But if you want to get like a lo-fi look, you could use something like Kodak Gold or whatever, you know, the cheapest film, you know, available is. You can go down to Woolworths, you can go down to Kohl's, and I think they still stock, you know, whatever the most garbage film is. But if you want that lo-fi look, you know, that stuff looks nice. Just throw a flash on and bleach it out. There's not much, you know, to that. But it's one of those things that's harder to perfect. Other advice I'd probably give is to not overthink it and just enjoy the slower process of taking photos and waiting for the film to be developed. Don't worry if you missed a shot or anything like that. Just enjoy the mystery, take the photos, wait to get them back, and just appreciate the art. But yeah, I'd love to see your shots. So if you haven't started yet, when you do take them, send them in, or just send them in if you got something that you like. Just hit me up on social media. I like to see that. The next question is from Maddie. Do you take better photos when you're sober or wasted? It's an interesting question, and I've done both and everything in between with mixed results. I remember once when we brewed the Soho East Coast Crusher beer, went to Stone & Woods brewery, and then they obviously, while we were brewing the beer, we were like, you know, they kept giving us different beers all day and then threw this big barbecue for us, and there was this amazing dog that Henry and I fell in love with. But, you know, it's probably because of the many beers we fell in love with it, because it was just a dog, cute dog, but it was a dog. And, you know, we were really drunk by the end, and then they gave us like this 7% beer. And I said, oh, drop me off at the Tivoli because I had to shoot Amity Affliction. And I was so drunk. And I remember, if you've ever been to the Tivoli, there's those couches just to the right of the photo pit. And I remember sitting on that and falling asleep, passing out, whatever you want to call it. And then I came to, I was like, oh man, something's really loud. And I looked around and I realized Amity were on stage, and I only had, because I don't know Amity, I only have the first three songs to shoot. So I was like, oh man, I got to get in this pit now. I'm so drunk. Went into the pit, fell over on the way into the pit, and then got back up. I was like, I asked someone, hey, what song is this? And they said, oh, this is the second song. So I only had like 1.5 songs to get photos while I was just obliterated drunk. And I told myself I would never get that drunk again. But at the same time, if you go to brew a beer with Soho, you're not going to worry too much about how sober you are. That's just a clash of dates and a good lesson for me. But somehow the Amity picks that I took were okay. I just didn't get as many of them. Normally, like, I come away with like 100 usable ones. But in this instance, I think I ended up with maybe 20, which isn't that bad given that I started by falling into the pit. But when I'm sober, on the other hand, when I'm sober, I feel like I overthink everything, and I don't, like, I can't pick up on the energy of the crowd as much. So it's definitely a fine line. It's kind of like when you play pool and you sort of, like, you know, you get in that zone and all of a sudden you're just sinking ball after ball. And then as soon as you have one more beer, you're the worst pool player ever. So there's that really fine line there. And you got to get in the zone. That's not to say, you know, sober photographers can't take great photos, but, you know, how I understand shows is drinking and sort of getting lost in the music and losing a bit of your inhibitions around that kind of stuff. And so to me, I need to understand being a punter, and I understand being a punter that way. And so as long as, you know, however you are, whatever you're normally, you know, whatever you normally are at a show, that's what I would recommend you be when you're taking photos as well. Because you, unless you're like an annoying punisher, then just don't take photos at all, please. Next question is from a user called a Marine Psycho. I don't know if it's a Marine Psycho or Marine Psychologist, because it was cut off. It just had a Marine Psycho dot, dot, dot. So I'm not sure. I apologize if you are a Marine Psychologist and I've just called you a Marine Psycho. Correct me if I am wrong. This is kind of like, do you call, you know, side note, right? I'm definitely going to be late for my flight at this rate. Side note, if you have multiple, like if someone makes something for a morning tea and they bring in, they make a batch of mousse and they serve it as individual mousse, like mousses, do you call that mousse? Or do you call it mousse or mousses? Because I've heard mousse. I think it might be mousse. Anyway, a Marine Psycho asks, I'm not... Oh, man, this is really playing on my mind now. Can someone please, when you're listening to this, can you, like, write to me and tell me if you think it's mousse, mousses, or mousse? I really want to know that. A Marine Psycho asks, it's not photography related, but how are you always keeping it real? It's bad timing for me to get onto that mousse and mises side note there, because I don't know if worrying about that is a real issue, but it's really kind of you to say that, you Marine Psycho. I don't think I try to see things in a certain way, but I try to remember that art is subjective. Like, anything creative is subjective. There's no right or wrong way. And even though I feel like everything that I do or create is wrong, I try to think from an outsider's perspective. Because if I have that creative doubt, then other people surely do too. And if they don't, that's great for them. But they're probably not, you know, considering the struggles of anyone else, because they wouldn't understand the self-doubt and the work that that self-doubt creates, if that makes any sense. When I first started with photography, no one helped me. And I've said this many times, you know, people online judge my work and I didn't even ask for feedback. So what are they judging? You know, I just like sharing it. Yeah, sure, it was bad and it could have been a lot better. But if you don't ask for feedback, why is it just assumed that people are giving you that feedback? That's not necessarily helpful, because the feedback that they give you isn't maybe how you're wanting to understand how to improve it, you know. And I didn't have any photographer friends. I didn't know any photographers, so I had no one to, you know, ask. I think part of learning how to be better at something, you know, the most important thing there is to trust the advice that you're given. If you don't trust the information that you're receiving from someone, you're not going to value it. And so I had no photographers that I knew that I could ask that information from. And I'm sure there was resources out there And given that I'm totally self-taught and I haven't spent a dollar to learn anything that I do, there's obviously some good content around, but it was really, really hard to access it or to find it. For whatever reason, I felt like I was on my own with it. And I could use the time that I spend doing this podcast or writing back to people on Instagram, you know, whatever I'm doing, I could use that time to take more photos. Yeah, sure, like now, then, whenever. But importantly, all the time I spend doing this kind of stuff now, I could be taking more photos. But I wouldn't feel good about doing that. That's very, I don't know, it just feels like maybe a little bit selfish of me. I wouldn't feel like I'm breaking a cycle if I didn't make the time to help out other people. I still learn from other people. Everyone learns all the time. Like even the most, you know, competent people, whoever you feel that person is, you know, everyone learns. So if I can pay it forward, even in the smallest amount, pay it forward, pay it backwards, whichever way that I possibly can, then I want to do that. I think the key is that it's okay to normalize the good and the bad that happens in life, and more specifically in the industry that we're in. You know, I always think about the people who give up on photography because of the things that happen to them, the things that they think are just happening to them. And I could go through life not sharing the things that happen to me. But maybe if I always shared everything, you know, as in the good or the bad in, you know, a fully honest way, then maybe just one photographer would know that, you know, unfortunately, it's normal to hit challenges in your journey. And maybe that photographer would go on to be the next big thing in the industry. Or maybe they could do photography for many more years and, you know, allows it to be a creative outlet for them. And I would hate to think that I could have done more to share the good, the bad, and the ugly about life in photography. Because it can be all those things. It can be good, bad, and it can be downright ugly. And I've talked about that many times on other episodes. But most importantly, I would hate to think that I could have been more honest. The reality is good things happen to me and bad things happen to me like they do anyone. And I think people who only share positive things about their, you know, on their stories, social, wherever they share it, I think it causes a lot of damage to people's self, you know, self-perspective and self-worth. I refer to it as like the social media highlight reel. It's very like one-dimensional. And I think as long as we're being constructive with the challenges that we face and the setbacks that happen to us, we can be more helpful and a more positive influence on our peers and our friends. That was a hard one to answer. So I appreciate you sending that in, because I like to think about, you know, that stuff. And it's a good reminder of, you know, why I love doing this stuff. The final question is from Elle. She asked, what do you shoot with? Your photos are incredible. Thank you for those kind words. And I'll tell you what I shoot with. I have no problem with that. But it's important to note that the results are mostly in the editing. That's where I think the individuality of photos really comes through. Before you actually edit the photo, shooting the photo is just like getting a clean canvas to work on and then just sketching the outline that you want to fill in. And sure, you need some reliable equipment, but you can do a lot on some budget stuff too. So, you know, in saying that, this is what I use. I use a Canon 5D Mark III. I used to use a Mark II. The Mark II was like really nice. I sold it to another photographer friend of mine, Tony Partridge. And I just find the 5D Mark III handles noise a lot better than the Mark II, which the Mark II was really, really good in a lot of ways. And the 5D Mark III wasn't a big, you know, performance leap ahead of that, but it processed noise a lot better. And for music photography, that's a really important thing. So the 5D Mark III was an important upgrade for me. I also use the Canon 24-70 2.8L IS-2. The image stabilization, I don't think really helps with this lens. So you could probably, you know, save, I think it's like $1,000 to get the non-image stabilization version. So if you're doing music stuff, But yeah, the 24-70 is a nice sort of short range walkabout lens. But then I also have the Canon 70-200 2.8L IS2. And that is such a nice lens. I know a lot of people talk about the 24-70 being a really nice lens. They both cost around the same amount. But I think if the 24-70 goes to 70, obviously, and then the 70-200 picks up from the 70, then really between those two lenses, you've got a total focal length range of like 24-200. So yeah, I find that the 70-200 really useful when I'm shooting festivals with, you know, stages that are a bit further away or they're a bit higher. I also, like, they were the two lenses that I started with, right? Well, didn't start with, but they're the ones that, you know, I was a big believer in. Oh, you know, I've got a Canon camera, so I should get Canon lenses. And at the time, Sigma weren't making great lenses, but then they brought out the Art Series lenses. And so I picked up the Sigma 35mm 1.4 in the Art Series. And that is such a nice lens. It's not weather sealed, so I can't really take it in the rain like I can with the other stuff, but it is a really, really nice lens and arguably sharper than the Canon version that I had before that. I had the Canon 50mm 1.2L and that focused so slowly. Yeah, sure, it opened up to 1.2, but it focused so slow, man. So yeah, I use the Art one of that. And then the Sigma, I've gotten this other Sigma lens. It's like a fisheye lens. I think it's like 15mm. I don't know. I've had it for years, right? That thing overexposes every photo that I take, but every fisheye photo or super, super wide photo that I take, generally of like behind the drummer, of like crowds, I use this lens. And it's a really good lens because it only cost me like $600. It overexposes, it focuses really slowly, but it is really wide and it's cheap. So even though it overexposes, if I just pull the exposure down when I edit, everything is still quite nice. It just looks really cooked when you look at the back of the camera when you first do it. And with the macro stuff that I do, I use two lenses. I use a Canon 100mm 2.8, which is actually a macro lens, and I use the Canon MPE 65mm. So 65mm doesn't sound like, you know, oh, that doesn't sound very zoomed. But it's not about that. It's about the lens is actually built in reverse. And so the magnification can go up to, I think, like four times the size, you know, on the sensor. I don't know much about the science, right? But if you look at like my Insta on my website and you see those photos of like bees, or I put up a pic of a spider last night, a jumping spider that was like the size of your pinky finger, your little finger, you know, that one beside your ring finger. The fingernail on that, it was like the size of that, maybe even a bit smaller. And you can see the amount of detail you can get using the Canon MPE 65mm. And I got a few other things that like I carry in my bag, obviously, like the Canon 580 EX speed light. I think it might be an EX2 actually. I don't really see much difference because now then they brought out the 600 and then there's another one. And they're all pretty cool, but you know, a speed light is a speed light. And for the macro stuff, I use Twin Light Flash 2, which obviously sits on the front of the MPE 65mm or the 100mm, and it clips on the front and you can arrange the two lights on the front, you know, and rotate them around the actual, you know, the filter on the front of the lens if you've got one of them, just so you can get the light to come from whichever angle you want. Because when you shoot macro stuff, you lose a lot of light in the process. And so it's really important to have a flash. And then I've got a whole heap of accessories that just make life a little bit easier, obviously like lens pens. And I've got like a flash arm so I don't have to actually dock the flash onto my actual camera. I can dock it onto the arm and that makes me able to put the flash, you know, from the side or various other ways. And if you see me go around with my GoPro, I often have the GoPro on there. It just gives me like another arm to hold onto so I can have my right arm on the camera so I can shoot. And then my left arm holds on to the flash bracket, I think is the proper term for it. I call it flash arm because it does kind of feel like, you know, It's a handle. Look, it's a cute word for a handle. Let's not get fancy. There's heaps of good stuff coming up. There's series. I'm going on tour with Heartaches. That's not why I'm going to Adelaide, even though Heartaches are Adelaide-based. But yeah, I'll be on tour with Heartaches. Series is coming up. Oh man, it feels like there's so much stuff coming up. But, you know, I want to talk about one thing. Crowbar Brisbane now has a sister or brother. I don't know which gender the venue is yet, but Crowbar is opening in Sydney as well. Baldface Stag is now Crowbar Sydney. I've never been to Baldface Stag, so I'm really, really keen to check it out. But you know how much I love Crowbar. And I don't love Crowbar because of the venue. I love Crowbar because of the people and the opportunities and the bands and how all of those things, you know, melt into one. It's really, really hard to explain, but I mean, if you've been to Crowbar before, or, you know, you even know people that have been to Crowbar, I guarantee you they will say it's the best place they have ever been. And, you know, whatever that reason is, whether you're a punter, whether you're a worker, whether you're in the industry, whether you actually work at Crowbar, it doesn't matter. Everyone speaks so highly of it. And so there's a formula that can't even be quantified. It's more than just a place. And I know I speak from, you know, a perspective of somebody that has been given a lot of opportunities thanks to Crowbar. You know, Flatliners are one of my favorite bands, and now they're friends of mine as well, because, you know, they know Trad, the owner, and Trad owns Crowbar, like I said. And he doesn't just own it from afar. He's in there. He's the lifeblood. And then there's Tyler as well, who's in there running Crowbar Black and downstairs. And now they're moving to Sydney and they're going to generate the whole thing again. And I can't help but feel sad that they're going to be in Sydney for like a year or two. But at the same time, I'm so happy for them. I'm so happy that, you know, Sydney can share the passion that, you know, we have here in Brisbane for Crowbar. And I know it's going to be such a success. And I've heard about some of the plans that they have for the opening week. And seriously, that it's so good. And that is just a testament to the Crowbar brand, that, you know, everyone wants to jump behind it and support it, because it's not really support, it's excitement for the next leg of the journey. And I've always talked to Trad and Tyler about, you know, where's Crowbar going next, right? Because the country needs to experience, you know, how amazing a venue can be when it's run by, you know, such beautiful people that care so much about the art of music, or the art of photography, or, you know, oh man, I tried to articulate it to Trad the other night, drinking espresso martinis at 3 a.m., just trying to tell him how appreciative I am and how proud I am of him and Tyler for, you know, just following their dream, expanding, taking opportunities, taking risks, and most importantly, for giving me everything that I have. Because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have met a lot of people who then gave me opportunities and have filtered down and down. And so I just really, really appreciate, and I want to, I definitely want to encourage everyone when it opens. I think it opens in December. I don't know if there's a hard date in December, but when it opens, I'm going to do my best to be there to help warm the room, a bit of a housewarming, a venue warming with them all down there. So Trad and Tyler, you've done an awesome job. I'm very excited for the next phase in the Crowbar journey. And I look forward to supporting that, obviously, any way that I can. So if you're in Sydney, you now have a new best venue in town come December. So definitely check that out. I feel like no matter how much I say about Crowbar, I cannot fully articulate how amazing it is and how amazing all the people that work there and that have made Crowbar what it is in Brisbane So amazing. And I have no doubt Trad and Tyler will do the exact same thing in Sydney. And then I'll have two places to call home. All right, that's it. I got to go to the airport. This took way too long. I think that moose and the meese thing really had me come undone. But I'm gonna jog on, and I will see you on the next ep. Ep 13 will be the next one. Unlucky number. Maybe we should skip that and just call the next ep 14 and then go from there. If I'm not superstitious, like I believe in ghosts, but I'm not superstitious. But I don't know, 13, that's a weird number. Maybe I just won't record on a Friday. That sounds like a good deal. In the meantime, keep shooting, enjoy it, give feedback. I like feedback. Everyone learns. And rate the podcast, especially in iTunes. That really helps. But it's obviously on Spotify. It's on YouTube. It's wherever. Throw me some feedback. Be honest with it too. But 5 stars do tickle me. All right. I'll see you next step.